You're listening to On the Record Online with Eric Schwartzman, where reporters and journalists go on the record about how they use the internet to cover the news. For the latest trends, tips, and tactics on how the web shapes popular opinion, subscribe to our RSS news feed or visit us online at www.ipressroom.com.
Nick Wingfield, internet reporter for the Wall Street Journal, goes on the record about the video game industry, the internet, and outmoded channels of communication.
I would say faxes are a waste of time, and people should stop sending them because I don't look at them. A lot of people in our bureau don't look at them.
We'll be back. Stay with us.
Don't be left behind. Get the latest online PR tools and services from iPressroom. Powerful, easy to use, available on demand. Extend your sphere of influence online with iPressroom, tools for online media centers, virtual private press rooms, RSS news feeds, podcasts, and more at www.ipressroom.com. iPressroom, always on, even when you're off.
Nick Wingfield covers the business of technology, video games, and the internet for the Wall Street Journal. It is continuously listed by PR Week in their annual survey as the single most desirable media outlet for coverage among CEOs. I am pleased to have him with me on this podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So, because the Wall Street Journal is such a desirable placement for people in the media relations business, I imagine there are a lot of people competing for your attention on a daily basis. How do you manage to filter all the information thrust your way?
Well, it's not easy, and as the various means of communicating with reporters have proliferated, it's gotten even more challenging. I'd say that one of the great challenges is trying to pick out a trend or the kernel of a really good story in a pitch that arrives through email, through fax, through phone, and that's just, there's no easy way to do it, but I think email actually in some ways has made it a little easier. I've become a very quick reader of email pitches and can pretty quickly figure out whether there's something worth spending time on, a good proposal, the kernel of a good idea.
Now, in the world of PR, we receive an incredible amount of spam because we have our email addresses on press releases that wind up getting aggregated on numerous sites. Mm. But I can imagine it's nothing compared to what you receive. So my question is, how do you decide what emails to read?
Some of that's gotten a little bit better in my personal experience since we've implemented corporate spam filters. So, I look for stuff from people I know. I look for things that have good subject lines, compelling subject lines. I mean, that's actually a pretty good skill to have, to condense down a story idea into, a sentence that can fit into a subject line. But, I open virtually every email I get, give it a quick scan, and usually someone who knows what they're doing can really crystallize their pitch in two or three sentences.
So now let's say you receive a press release or an email pitch that you are somewhat interested in. Mm. How much of it do you actually read?
Well, enough really to get a sense of whether there's something there. It varies from time to time. It depends on the day, if there are attachments connected with it, I usually don't read it. I find that the most kind of skilled email pitchers will, just do a clean text message, maybe give me a link to a website or something like that. But, often phone calls, too, are valuable. It's just a little bit harder to return phone calls than it is to respond to emails. So I find that my response rate, I'm probably a little more polite on email and responsive in terms of getting back to people.
So back to email for a second. Let's say you receive an email with a pitch that you're somewhat interested in. Mm-hmm. And you want to take the next step. What is the first action that you would take?
I would call the person up. I might look at, if I'm not familiar with the company that they're representing, I might go to their website, check it out, see what else has been written on it. If there's been a lot written on it in other mainstream media, it probably isn't a story that I'll pursue. The Journal very much likes to, you know, kind of do things that they haven't read in other papers. So I'll do a little due diligence and then call up the PR person, call up somebody at the company if I know someone there, and see if I can take it to the next level.
So now, let's say you go to the company's website for more information. Mm-hmm. What do you expect to find?
I usually expect to find good, comprehensible detail on what the company does. And comprehensible is actually a very difficult thing to achieve in the tech industry. I mean, many are the occasions when I have been dissuaded from talking to a company that couldn't kind of crystallize what its mission is or what its products are to a layperson. And if it's filled with all sorts of marketing mumbo-jumbo that you can't really decipher, then, you know, I find that it's probably not worth the effort of taking it to the next level. So if I can actually understand what they do, that's a good step, you know, if the website's sort of done the trick. And, you know, if I can see which customers are using their products, or if I can see that they have good investors that I recognize from, you know, sort of top-tier VC firms, or if they're public, you know, that's another thing I look for. But usually companies just do a good job of making their website comprehensible, and that's enough to take it to the next level.
So how specific, I mean, would you say that the quality of their website impacts your perception of that company?
Probably, but if it's a really compelling pitch, it could be a website that looks like it was put together by a high school student. I mean, I've dealt with companies and done you know, big features on companies that had relatively what I would call shoddy websites. But they were you know, the pitch sort of overcame the amateurishness of the website. So it's not a hard and fast rule, but you know, a professional website does help somewhat.
So you think there is some connection between perception and the state of a company's website?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, but again, there are as many exceptions that defy the rule as probably prove it. There are companies, for instance, that, you know, are in stealth mode, that haven't really sort of officially unveiled themselves. So if you go to their website and there's some placeholder for the company, in some cases it makes me a little more curious. In some cases it, you know, it can be frustrating because you want to know more. But it really depends, I think, on this whole variety of factors. You know, do I know the person who's pitching me? Do I trust them? If they say it's a really compelling company with an interesting new approach to doing something, then I may spend the time to go beyond a shoddy website.
Now, are there any alternative channels besides email that you like to receive news in?
Phone call is probably the best, but what I discourage people from doing is doing both. I mean, in other words, don't email me and phone me. It's probably best to do one or the other. It just makes it easier for me to manage the incoming flow of pitches. I would say faxes are a waste of time, and people should stop sending them because I don't look at them. A lot of people in our bureau don't look at them. And mail is selectively useful. People will send things by FedEx, gimmicky things, you know, sort of, you know, I got a company that sent me a dead plastic fish in the mail for a video game that they were introducing. And it was kind of fun, but it probably cost them a fair amount of money, and it was not necessary, you know. And so I would say that kind of stuff, they can save their money, and they don't need to do that kind of thing.
What about RSS? Any interest in monitoring the world of RSS or the blogosphere in particular?
In the past, I guess, month or two, I've set up my first RSS reader, and I monitor a lot of blogs. I don't think I'm receiving pitches through blogs, as it were, but I am certainly monitoring news as it breaks on other competitive news sites, you know, from newspapers, weeklies, as well as the blogs. I find it very useful.
So it seems as though you're beginning to adopt the use of on-demand technology to filter through the plethora of information on the Internet, as opposed to, I guess, setting a time to read that email. or checking for something on your own, you're sort of set up now to receive it when it comes to you. Do you see the PR industry making use of on-demand technology to get its word out?
You know, you would probably be a better expert on that subject. I think of RSS as a public phenomenon as opposed to email, which is mostly a private phenomenon. I mean, if I'm on a group blast email, for instance, there probably is no qualitative difference between that and somebody who sends out a proposal or a pitch by RSS. But the most valuable pitches that I get are intended for me and are sort of crafted to the journal specific interests. And I don't really see RSS being a solution for that kind of pitch. I do find it incredibly useful, though, for monitoring what's going on in a plethora of individual websites without having to visit every single one of those sites. It's really a better interface to all of that. But I don't think it's at least I haven't seen a compelling way to turn that into a personal means of communication.
Now, Nick, Dow Jones obviously has the Wall Street Journal, which is a print edition. There are three editions. There's the Asian, the European, and the one we get here. There's also the Wire service. Mm-hmm. And I guess what we're seeing is daily readership of newspapers is declining as a result because people don't wait for the morning paper to get their news anymore. Mm-hmm. And also because of the internet communicating news so much quicker. So my question is, how has that impacted your coverage in the newspaper? What are you guys doing differently to make yourselves competitive in the face of 24-hour news?
Well, the first and most obvious example is not holding stories that we have any reasonable suspicion will be breaking on the internet, on blogs, on competitive websites. And so in the past, I don't know, God, 6 years, you've seen more and more stories going up on the journal's website, particularly in the tech area, because, you know, we have such a intense readership among, and there's a sort of natural fit between people who are interested in tech and WSJ.com. So more stories are going up on the website. We contribute more to the Wires, to the Dow Jones Wire service, which is a real-time service. And so you're just seeing us devote more time to that. Weekends, we send more stuff out over the Wires on the weekends and on the website on the weekends. The journal, at least until later this year, does not have a weekend edition, but they will be introducing a Saturday edition. So eventually we will have a more, we'll have a different sort of window for breaking stories over the weekend on the paper. But I think, yeah, the web is just becoming a more and more important channel for us to get news out. And, you know, every week, you know, every 2 weeks, I post a story that's exclusive to online and later goes out in the paper.
Now, the New York Times announced yesterday that after 35 years, they're changing the format of their op-ed page. They're actually expanding it. We've seen the AP announce recently that they're going to move colorful leads for the newspaper clients. Do you think the daily newspaper industry is going to have to get more involved in analysis and comment to be more competitive in the face of 24-hour news?
I've felt no push in the direction of what I think you described as commentary. Analysis, though, absolutely. I mean, there is a difference, though, I think, between trying to add some value to events that are breaking in real time with, you know, what you might call the Wall Street Journal analysis of the story, and a reporter sort of giving their opinion about a particular event. I think we're much less on the opinion side in the news pages than we are on the analysis side. But absolutely, there's more and more effort to bring an analytical perspective to stories and to break news, too. I mean, we still break a lot of news, especially on the tech beat. But I think we're trying to distinguish ourselves from what you might see in a lot of other online outlets that that are primarily focused more on the breaking news aspect of things.
And just as a follow-up, seeing as how you are a chief reporter with the Wall Street Journal, we are obviously seeing huge deficits, and Warner Rock is costing a lot of money. What is your general broad perspective on the economy in this country as a whole?
God, you know, Not being an economics reporter, I'm probably not the best person to comment on that. Certainly within the tech industry, though, I'll say that we are seeing a mix of really a mixed bag. I mean, there are corporate IT spending, to my knowledge, is not, you know, kind of swung back from the dot-com collapse, but you do see a tremendous amount of startup activity. There certainly seems to be no dimming of creativity in the high-tech industry. So there's a lot of opportunities out there, and I'm getting pitches constantly from new market segments and video games, and areas like mobile communications and mobile entertainment, for instance, are one area that we're seeing a lot of venture-backed startup activity and companies going public. So within my slice of the economy, there are some signs of optimism, but it's also but there's also clearly been a big change since the dot-com years.
Now, the other thing we're hearing is that a lot of these companies that you're mentioning are actually outsourcing the heavy lifting overseas. Is that something you're seeing, and do you think that impacts the health of the tech sector from an investment standpoint?
Well, in video games, which is an area that I'm focused on, there are very early stages on this. It's not as far along in terms of outsourcing as some of the other industries, but you are starting to see companies develop studios over in China for developing video games, and you're starting to see companies suggest that there are states within the U.S. that are less hospitable to tech development and game development than are places outside the U.S., I mean, even Vancouver and Montreal. So, you are starting to see some signs of this, but there hasn't been a full-blown outsourcing movement, at least in the areas of the industry that I'm covering. I mean, Apple Computer, for instance, does their manufacturing for the iPod in China. They do outsource it. That's been going on for a long time, but a lot of the design, the really, you know, sort of high-value stuff, is happening in Cupertino. So they're keeping a lot of the most, you know, the sort of highest end of the production of that device in the U.S.
So one of the foreign correspondent columnists for the New York Times, Thomas Friedman, recently came out with a book, The World is Flat, and he's making predictions that we are no longer competitive as a nation. Do you prescribe to that theory?
I've read many of Tom Friedman's books, not the most recent one, but I've heard many people in the technology industry talk about our lack of competitive, the fact that we may be losing our competitive edge. I wouldn't say that I subscribe to any particular view on that. I don't have any strong feelings, but I do. You do see a lot of competition coming from places like China, for instance, in new areas of the tech industry, semiconductors, things like that. So I do know that that's a view that a lot of people in the tech industry are expressing and warning of. But I don't know that we've seen a full-blown impact of that on the areas of the industry I'm covering.
Now, you mentioned that you're focusing now, first and foremost, on the video game industry. Is that as a result of the growth of that industry?
Partly as a result of the growth, yes. It's now a form of mainstream entertainment. It's a very significant industry approaching domestic box office sales in the U.S. for movies. So it's an industry that we and others are starting to pay a lot closer attention to. So, yes, that's the result of it. Also, I just needed a change from what I was covering before. And this was as different a beat as I could imagine.
And can you give us any tips of what to look for? Any predictions?
Well, the big story for this coming year is going to be a big battle between Sony and Microsoft in the area of video game consoles. It's really going to be a battle for the living room over the box that delivers interactive entertainment and potentially allows you to access the internet as well.
Great. Well, thank you for taking the time to speak with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to On the Record Online with Eric Schwartzman, where reporters and journalists go on the record about how they use the web to cover the news. For the latest trends, tips, and tactics on how the web impacts corporate reputations, subscribe to our RSS news feed or visit us online at www.ipressroom.com.